All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to News and Views. 4 minutes and 13 seconds after the hour, it is the 29th day of October, and we're glad to have you along for News and Views. Now, we're doing a couple things in the studio, and I hope it's working, and that is we're trying to record what our guest and I are going to talk about here right now. Now, the guest in studio is Greg Forrest. Many of you are familiar with him. You may only know one of his various personas. You may know Greg Forrest, the musician, and that may be how people know Greg, the musician.
I hope they know me as a musician.
And
if they don't,
they
come on out.
See you at events, they hear you play, they hear you sing, and they know Greg Forrest, the musician. Well, but wait, there's Greg Forrest, the businessman. Now, everybody doesn't quite know that angle. Tell us a little about Greg Forrest, the business person.
Well, I own a company called The Music Office, and in 2009 we'll celebrate 25 years of keeping the doors open. And we do CD and DVD replication and authoring, overseas licensing. We own a record label and a video production company.
All right. So you're where that is, you've got a fancy pants studio, and you can record, and you can burn, and you can transfer, and you can create.
I don't know. I think the fancy pants studio guys in town would beg to differ, but I have a little project studio. I go to the fancy pants studio to cut the loud stuff. My neighbors don't want loud stuff in the neighborhood anymore.
Okay. All right, so we've got musician. What kind of instruments do you play?
Well, pretty much I'm a guitarist, although I do play some keyboard and accordion and lap steel and mandolin, but pretty much guitar is what you'll see me on stage with.
And then you sing, because I just heard you recently, and you were playing and singing with some other men and doing an excellent job.
Right. That was our primary band, the Welfare Fathers, that, well, I might as well stick a pitch in, I guess. We're at Welfare, Texas every Sunday.
All right, there you go. So now we've talked a little businessman, a little musician. Now talk about the author.
Well, this year's been really good for me. I've had two books published so far by Hal Leonard, who's a music education publisher. And one of them was on how to create and promote your own music videos, and the other one is on the contract side of the music industry, basically an overview of how to best have a little career self-defense for musicians and songwriters.
Very good. Very good. I like it. Very practical.
Yes.
Because you've had the experiences. You've been through it, so then you know how to help others to say, now look, I've been there and did that, and this didn't work.
Right.
Very good.
My third book with Hal Leonard, so I'm real proud of that relationship.
That's excellent. All right. Now, what I want you to hear, ladies and gentlemen, we're talking to Greg Forrest. Now, he is a businessman. He is an author, and he is a musician.
Small businessman.
And all of those things kind of connect because those talents all come together to be the man, Greg Forrest. Now, in addition to that, he has a political interest and views, just like all of us do. And we're going to talk a little bit about the campaign right now. We're not going to hurry. We're going to talk about some of the issues. We're going to talk about some of the people and some of the events that have gone on. Now, we'll start with, let's say, what do you feel about the polls? What do you think the polls are telling us? Do you trust the polls? Do you feel good about polls? What do you? Let's talk polls a minute.
Polls. Well, I guess since I'm an Obama supporter, I'm unabashedly Obama supporter, I love the polls. There's not a one out there that shows McCain ahead, although he is closing this week. And I don't know. Before I go screaming about a great Obama victory, I have to keep in mind that, number one, it ain't over till it's over, and number two, John McCain is the king of the comeback. I remember a year ago he didn't have two nickels to rub together, and he's carrying his own baggage through the airport. Well, look at where he's come in 1 year. So you can't count a guy like that down. But, if I'm looking at the polls, it's going to be a landslide victory. It looks like we might even get the 30 in the Senate.
All right. Now, I have said that, in my opinion, based on the early vote that's happening across the country and the record-breaking numbers across the country.
Excellent news for Obama, yes.
Well, I have said that's one of two things, in my opinion. It's either that Obama's going to win by a number larger than anybody even fathomed, or it's going to be the other way, is that there's going to be more people vote for McCain than we thought.
Well, it could go either way.
But I'm tending to believe it's the Obama side, because of the new voters and their new registrations and the larger turnouts, because it's happening everywhere. Period. Even in Kerrville.
I went down Tuesday. I couldn't believe it, that a week before the election, I had to drive around the parking lot three or four times at the Catalyst Center to find a park space. Now, once I got in, and I would like to tell your listeners, James, once you're in the door, it's just a cakewalk right through. 10-15 minutes, you're in and out.
Yeah.
It's real easy. I would recommend you do it, and I really feel sorry for the poor people in other states that don't get to vote early. Can you imagine the nightmare they're going to have to go through?
I think it's going to be a problem. There will be long lines, and then there will be discontent over, we got to keep the poll open. There's 400 people still standing in line. I mean,
right,
that's going to happen.
Right.
Yeah, now, by the way, Joe Armistead had called in while you were on the way in, and he told us that 1,422 voted early on Monday, 1,321 voted early on Tuesday, and so far, if you add the 5 days of last week plus those two, 10,300 have voted early so far. Now,
wow.
I know it. I know it. And he pointed out there's only 34,387 eligible in the county. And already a third of them have already voted.
Well, I think they want to avoid the rush on next Tuesday. I would say to every listener out there, if you can get down to the Cali Center in the next day or two, I think they close on Friday, don't they?
Yes.
Get on in there because you'll save a lot of time and heartache.
You did one of my promos right there. well done. Okay, now, so on the polling.
Oh, and after you vote on Friday, go over and see James at Ken Stoppel.
That's right. Well, or come see me and then go vote, because mine's 9 to 11.
Okay.
So that'll work, too. Yeah, come by, have a cup of coffee and a donut, get your treat that I'm going to pass out, party favors, and listen a little while, and then go vote. I like it.
All right.
Good plan. Okay. Now, I am going to remind you of something, and this always bugged me. Now, it didn't happen here. It happened about 4 or 5 years ago. I'm thinking it was on Fox News, but I can't swear to that. It was one of those groups where there's three or four of them, and there's a panel, and it's like Brit Hume talking to them. Now, I'm not sure if Rasmussen was the guy they were talking to, or if Zogby was the guy they were. I don't know which one they were talking to, but the person revealed something, and it was. I just sat there going, this can't be. You can't say this on the air. You can't do this. This is no. You know, and here's what he revealed. The typical poll of 1,000 phone calls is weighted, and 40% of those calls are in two states, New York and California. Well, excuse me? And then he said, and by the way, there's five states we don't even place any calls into. Oh, I didn't know that. And then besides that, he said that we poll at a particular time of day that likely the person who's working and pays the bills isn't going to answer the phone. Well, when they reveal those three components of the average national poll, I thought, hey, stacked deck, fixed, rigged. Because if 40% of the calls are into New York and California, hey, you can get any result you want because those are Democrat states. And when you call and you're getting the person who doesn't work, and you call and you're not even doing five states. But anyway, I'm just saying, when I heard all that on that program, from that point forward, I'm not sure I trust this.
Well, there's two things I'm sure are sure that I'm sure you saw this on Fox News, because I doubt you watch anything else.
I don't watch CNN.
I'm sure you don't. But
or MSNBC.
Regarding polling metrics, at least in this cycle, it's pretty interesting is that the major pollers, and you mentioned Zogby and Gallup and stuff like that, the way they weight their responses is pretty interesting. They're using the metrics from the 2006 election, which is good. I guess that's favorable to the Democrats, but they're not factoring in the huge amount of new voters that are coming into this cycle.
Yeah, I read that.
They're not being cycled into the metrics of the polling information. So, and another reason, I think part of the reason why California and New York are so heavily weighted is because of the size of their electoral college, the weight of their states. They probably add up to 40% of a victory towards a presidential victory. So, yeah, of course you're going to focus on the states. I'm not going to go do a poll in some state that has two or three electoral votes. That's not really going to carry the election. What's going to carry the election is going to be the large states, New York, California, Florida, Ohio, Pennsylvania. Look at the ones who have the big electoral votes. And John McCain's fighting for his life in every one of those states.
Yes.
That he hasn't lost already outright.
Yeah. Yeah. No, your observation's absolutely on. Absolutely. Okay.
So do I trust the polls? No. But if I take the aggregate of all the polls, 528.com is a good place to look at that. They pretty much poll all the polls and come up with an aggregate formula, which looks very good for Barack Obama.
Yeah, yeah, and I have had others say what you just said.
And another thing, I'd kind of like to let your listeners know, I'm not a Democrat, I'm an independent. I don't know what my neighbors are thinking this year. The first yard sign that went out there was for Ron Paul. It was the first contribution financially I've ever made to any presidential campaign ever. Ron Paul got my first money. And then I guess after Ron Paul got laughed off the stage by everybody, he was the only one I thought was speaking to the truth, especially regarding financial and foreign policy. I have a Keith Williams, you know, sign out in my front yard. So I don't know what my neighbors think of me because I got an Obama one out there now. So I've been pushing Republicans, I guess, the first third of this election cycle. And then, well, I got the choices I had. I'd probably be voting Republican had Hillary Clinton, but, well, maybe not that far. But I was for Obama from the get-go on this just because he's fresh, he's new, and he's gotten to where he's gotten, at least in my view, on ability and talent. He came from a single mother welfare food stamp home and through scholarship and talent got where he is. And so I have a lot of enthusiasm about him as a candidate.
All right, well said. We're going to go to break. We'll be back in just a minute. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to News and Views. This is Wednesday the 29th. It's 19 minutes after the hour. My guest is Greg Forrest, and now we're talking a whole bunch of stuff. We've talked a little about polling. Now let's talk about the economy. Now what we're doing here, this is as an issue as it relates to the campaign, because the economy is a monster issue. And, there'll be many people who will vote based on that. And don't even care about, I'm going to make up stuff, they don't even care about other issues. They may be for gay marriage, they may be against gay marriage, but many won't even have that, many will make a decision based solely on their pocketbook, and they'll vote that way in what they perceive to be in their best interest economically. They could be pro-life, they could be pro-choice, but they won't make a decision on that. They could be a union member or non-union, but won't make a decision on that. They'll let the economy and the pocketbook override, and that happens. That happens because that's what's going on out there. All right, let's jump in and talk economy. What did you followed a little bit the Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac stuff?
Sure did. As I was driving in, I guess I also heard your the comment from I guess the reader out in Hunt. And, I don't know, there's not really a lot I want to say about Fannie Mae except this. One of John McCain's chief advisors is a guy named Rick Davis. He owns a lobbying firm. He's a partner in it, an equity partner in the lobbying firm. And Rick Davis's lobbying firm has been receiving from Fannie and Freddie $30,000 a month for the last 5 years, as recently as September of 08. I'm talking last month. So when you're talking about Freddie and Fannie, I also mentioned the letter you read over the air was talking about all the, legislative proposals put forward by the Bush administration and the GOP regarding the regulation of Fannie and Freddie and tightening down on all these crazy bank policies. I would like to know what legislation you're talking about, James.
All right. I have a list.
Recall correctly, the chief financial advisor of the McCain campaign is a guy named Phil Graham. And Phil Graham is the patron saint of banking deregulation. Phil Graham is one of these guys we were talking about, going after Enron. Phil Graham is one of the guys who's going to answer for this, I hope.
Yeah, now, just a sec, Greg. Mm-hmm. You're wrong. Just hang on. Graham, Bliley, and Leach. Uh-huh. Bill Clinton signed the bill. Joe Biden voted for the bill.
Who put the bill forward?
Hang on.
Who put the bill forward,
and Bill
James?
Clinton has already said it had nothing to do with what you're screaming about because, in fact, in a couple of settings, it increased regulation, not decreased it. Now
give me an example of GOP increased regulation on the banking and mortgage industry, James.
Bliley and Leach, signed by Bill Clinton, signed and voted
what
for
was
by
that,
Joe
what
Biden.
What was that legislation
now,
called?
Here are the 13 or 14 specific times the Bush White House tried to give greater regulation to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. There's 4 years of specific attempts that did not have success.
Okay, these specific attempts, I'm looking at this list, there's nothing specific about this list, James. It doesn't have any legislation mentioned here.
13 or 14, well, the president doesn't introduce legislation.
No, of course not. He sure doesn't.
13 attempts, 13 or 14, where he tried to do strengthened regulation
of Fannie Mae. Well, it's one thing to say that. It's one thing to say, well, I don't have any of those specific laws in front of me right now. I have a Glenn Beck program printout. I know what this is going to say, James.
Of the attempt. Now wait a minute. Wait a minute. You're saying that just because Glenn Beck produced the document so I could read it, that therefore it's not trustworthy?
No, I'm saying that Glenn Beck obviously has right-wing leanings. Anybody who thinks otherwise is very uninformed.
So then therefore the material can't be accurate.
No, I'm not saying that at all, James. I'm saying there's no specifics inside that list right there. Specific legislation. There is nothing on it. Name one of the bills that's mentioned. H.R. what? Or Senate resolution what? They're not there, James. Are you telling me, James, that the GOP has been for banking regulation, has been for monitoring what's going on with this? In the last 28 years, I'd like to remind the listeners out there, the GOP's been in control 20 of the last 28 years. And I know that it's really nice for people to pop up and think this all happened yesterday on a Democratic watch. But this deregulation thing's been going on 20 years since Reagan took office.
Let's see.
This is a problem that's been building over time, James. It didn't appear last year.
Chris Dodd got $165,000 from Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Barack Obama got $126,000 from Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. John Kerry got $111,000 from Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Franklin Raines, Jamie Gorelick, and the Johnson guy, all either currently work for Barack Obama or did until they got caught.
If you add all those figures, it doesn't come up to the amount
that
Rick Davis has taken.
That's not my point.
One of John McCain's chief campaign advisors, has taken in more money than everything you just added up, James.
And the point is?
The point is that one of John McCain's chief advisors has taken more money in his lobbying firm than all the donations to the candidates directly, including all the ones you just named. If you add up those numbers.
The point is what?
Well, the point is John McCain's sitting there saying he's going to throw lobbyists out of Washington when they're running his campaign. I doubt that. Well, I doubt that completely, James.
That's not true?
McCain has no lobbyists on his campaign?
That's not accurate.
Oh, it's not accurate?
That's not accurate.
Well, okay, name some people on the McCain campaign who aren't registered lobbyists.
That's not accurate. Now,
name one person on the John McCain campaign that isn't a registered lobbyist, James. You can't do it.
And the point being what?
McCain's running on George Bush's platform, James, and George Bush has been resoundingly turned away by the American people.
No,
he's at 23%, James, and I'm proud to say I'm one of the 77 who thinks he's done a horrible job.
He's at a 29% approval, and Congress
wow,
is at
he's
a 9.
Wow, he's
Congress
jumped
is
up.
At 9, so he's almost three times more approved than the Democrat-controlled Congress.
Well, we're going to see who's going to be controlling Congress next time. Basically, what's going to happen this election, in my prediction, is an overwhelming, resounding victory for Obama, which is not a rejection of John McCain and Sarah Palin. It's a rejection of right-wing ideology and economic policies that focus on the wealthy. The wealthiest people in this country have been getting a free ride. You talk about, you know, redistributing the wealth. Well, it all went out of our pockets, the working class, into people like Halliburton, who've now moved to Dubai, their corporate headquarters, after screwing the American public out of billions of dollars on bad contracts in Iran for work in Iraq that hasn't been done. Halliburton, the patriotic company that used to be, you know, run by Dick Cheney, pulls up stakes and moves to Dubai where there's no corporate taxes. Okay, great. Well, if that's your idea of what American patriotism and what American economics is all about, James, that's why you guys are going to lose the election.
Well,
the reason you're going to lose the election is because the Republicans are no longer looking to the middle.
All right,
they want the far right to run things, and this is not a far right country, James.
The far right is not the problem, but the lies of the Democrats are overwhelming the people in the marketplace.
Give me some.
And they're buying a lot of them.
Give me some.
All right. We're always being told by the left-wing Democrat Party that the wealthy don't pay their fair share. Well, the top 1%, based on the last tax returns, pay 40% of all the taxes. The top 5 pay 60% of all the taxes. The top 25 pay 86% of all the taxes, and the top 50% pay 97% of all the taxes. So if the wealthy aren't paying the way, who is? Because the bottom 50% didn't even pay 3%. Now, this was income taxes, not Social Security, because they
pay. Well, of course, because we know no one pays corporate taxes, James. You'd be a fool to pay portrait taxes, because why pay corporate taxes? Because no one's out there looking to see if you pay them. Bush told the cops to go take 8 years off, and they did.
No, you're just
35% of the corporations in this country pay no taxes, James. $0. And you're calling that patriotic?
What do the other 65% do?
Well, they pay taxes,
too. Oh, well, okay. But the bottom 50% of the income tax filers basically only pay sales taxes, Social Security taxes, and Medicare taxes. They do pay those now, I know that. Okay. But they don't pay income taxes. Well, so how can the Democrats say that the wealthy don't pay? Excuse me? They're the only ones paying.
No, what the Democrats are saying is that the wealthy in this country pay more than anyone else in the Western world, and we end essentially... When Joe Biden says it's patriotic to pay taxes, yes, during days like this, it is very patriotic. And for John McCain to say he's going to lower taxes, he's doing a George Bush one. He's going in there with read my lips. I'm sorry, Mr. McCain. I'm sorry, Barack Obama. But the next president is going to have a new tax policy, and that's going to mean raising taxes. Why? Because the GOP and George Bush, these are the guys who are supposed to be the stewards of fiscal responsibility. Well, since they've taken office... The national debt, I can't even figure it out now, but I know it's a large enough number. It's over $10 trillion because the counter at the Department of... they broke the counter. They didn't have that many digits.
It couldn't go to that number.
This happened on a GOP watch, okay? And if you think that's good for the economy, James?
No, that's horrible.
It's horrible. What do you think about this bailout?
I didn't like it.
I don't like it either. Why? Because the problem, and this is the problem that I hear from the right so much, is these poor homeowners that went in there and took mortgages they couldn't afford. Well, James, the bottom line on those people who took those mortgages is they've been foreclosed on, they're out on the street, they're not on the stage anymore. What happened here, James, is you take a $100,000 mortgage and you leverage it into a $10 million investment security. Okay, and then you go out and you find out, well, we've got $10 million exposure on this, on a $100,000 asset that's falling in value. Oh, shoot, we better cover ourselves and insure that with a credit default swap. Okay, so when you look at this problem, it's not the borrower that's to blame. It's not even the originating lender. Somebody walks in at 9 o'clock to Wells Fargo here, does a $100,000 mortgage. They pay $3,000 in fees. By noon, Wells Fargo's made $3,000. By 3 o'clock that afternoon, they've sold that loan to a mortgage broker and made another $8,000. So Wells Fargo spent a few hours filling out the paperwork, walks away with $8,000 and no exposure.
All right. Don't forget that point. We'll be right back. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's do at least recognize this. We've had a spending explosion. Now, I know Democrats don't like to give credit to Bush for anything. Especially the fact that the old one...
Oh, no, we're going to give him credit for a lot of this stuff. He's going to get plenty of credit.
Yeah,
watch the election. He's going to get lots of credit.
It's inappropriate, but in any case, the 2001 and 2003 tax cuts brought the largest additional revenue stream of new money to the Treasury in the history of the nation. Now, that's just the front side. Now, that wasn't bad. That was good. But now let's go to the back side of it. The back side was that Bush acted like a Democrat, joined the Democrats and about a third of the Republicans, and had spending go stark, raving, mad, out of control. Just off the charts. So even though we had better revenue, we had expenditures greater than the revenue, and now we're in debt to the tune that we can't even fathom. Is it $10.3 trillion?
Like so, 11.3? The counter broke, and James and I were talking on the break, and he was saying gazillions, and I was going... Well, I think that is probably the next... I'm not really sure what the next number is. I don't know if it's... Maybe it's the cinco billions or... I don't know what you call it, but a zillion sounds like a lot, but it's probably just going to be chump change come a year. If John McCain's elected, it's going to be chump change. Gazillions will be chump change instead of trillions.
No. John McCain's not proposing new spending. your buddy Barack Obama is. But either case.
No, not new spending. It's called realignment of our investment.
Yeah, I know. Let's give more to the people that don't
work. Yeah, let's spend more money on education.
Give more to the people that don't produce.
We don't need no health care.
That's the state's problem. All right, let's speak health care. That's good. I'm glad you hit that. Let's talk health care.
Okay.
Barack Obama says it's a right, and John McCain says it's a privilege. How do you feel on that one?
Well, golly, if I kind of look at the Declaration of Independence, I believe the first thing they say in there is life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. So, yeah, I think that any of the other rights granted by the Constitution or our government are kind of secondary if you're not alive to enjoy them.
Okay,
and
would imagine
a right to life or like
would
you, James, would be behind
children?
That.
Would that include unborn children? Or do they have a right
certainly
to life?
In your lexicon.
Yeah.
Certainly in your
lexicon. Yeah.
And I would be using that as a life was the first one. And if I was a right winger, I'd be using that a lot.
So health care is a right, not a privilege.
I do believe that.
It's just the opposite. It's a responsibility and it's a privilege. It is not a right. Now, let me show you why. Because the laws have already been put in place that the hospital can't turn you away.
Okay, I'm one of the 43 million U.S. citizens without health care right now, John.
You mean health insurance.
How is McCain going to help me get that? How is he going to help those 43 million without
insurance? Why is it his duty to help you? It's yours. You should be getting health insurance. It's your problem. It's not the taxpayers.
Oh, okay. Well, that's really great. So how do I afford health insurance? Where does that $12,000 a year come from, James, if I'm making 18?
I'll give you
if
a
I'm
hint.
I'm making $18,000 a year
I'll give you a hint.
Working at Walmart.
I'll give you a hint.
How do I get that $12,000?
Get rid of the four-wheeler. Get rid of the jet ski. Get rid of the new pickup. Get rid of the... paintball equipment that you've got.
Boy, I don't know any Walmart employees that are looking at those kinds of assets.
You've
got a household with $18,000 take home. $12,000 of that needs to go to health care.
No.
Now you're telling me that an average family can live on $500 a month, James?
What you're doing is saying it's up to the government to take care of that, and that's not the government's
role. No, John McCain's saying we'll take care of the first $5,000 in the tax credit, right?
Where's the other
$7,000 going to come from? And where does that $5,000 go? It doesn't go to the consumer. It goes right to the health insurance industries. That's why they love it, because John McCain's going to underwrite a third of everybody's policies. That's great, because the money goes out of the government coffers into the coffers of the insurance companies the way the GOP want it.
Let's get back to Greg. Okay. Greg doesn't have health insurance.
No, I don't.
Whose fault is that?
Greg's.
Okay, that's true of most of the 43 million.
Absolutely.
Of the 43 million, there's probably 20 million of them are illegal aliens. Oh, excuse me. Then there's a whole bunch of those.
I'm talking about U.S. citizens here, James. I believe the statistics are not including illegal aliens.
I think they do. I think they do.
When we say there's 43 million Americans.
It says
43 million Americans. For some reason, you don't hear that word.
They're Central Americans, South America. They're Americans. They're just not
U.S.
citizens.
So you're saying that South Americans are Americans.
And so are Canadians. They're Canadians.
They're Americans,
it's
too.
The American
why don't we let the Canadians vote here, James?
Hey, they probably have been.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, that's where the rest of the dead bodies come in and vote. Now, hang on about the health insurance.
Okay, I got it.
If there's 43 million that don't have
health insurance. So Cesar Chavez is an American. Wow, that's a pretty good twist, James.
You don't think Mexico is a part of the North American continent?
Well, of course I do, James.
Central America is part of the American continent?
Well, let's just say, then everybody's a citizen of planet Earth, and we should all be able to vote in any election we want on any country.
All right. Now,
by the same logic.
I don't mind that you hold the view that somebody else should pay for your health insurance. I don't mind.
I'm not asking anybody to pay for my health insurance.
Well, but you're promoting that the government should provide health care for you.
No, I'm trying to be a compassionate individual that knows there's people out there in need, and I'm not going to turn my back on them.
Wait a minute.
As an ethical, moral person, I'm not turning my back on those less fortunate than me.
Greg.
I'm not going to walk over their backs either.
Greg, here's where you just totally don't understand.
Okay.
That's you and your church and your Sunday school class and the Red Cross and the Salvation Army and the Kiwanis Club and all you and your civic and social involvements, which are many, that's where you help that fellow man. Now, it's not in Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution, so it's not the duty or the function of the government, because the Constitution says so, to take my money to give health care to them. Now, hang on. I don't mind.
As soon as they enacted the Internal Revenue Service, I don't mind. They have their money. They have the right to take their money from you and do anything they want with it, James.
It's not anything a function of government. However, I am going to be with you on your church and Red Cross and Salvation Army and all the other civic and social involvements to help provide stuff for them. I'm with you. I'll be right there. I'll give. I'll help. And I don't mind.
Oh, I do too.
Yeah.
I give
but it's not the function of government. It's not the function of government.
It's not the function of government. You just heard it from James.
It's
to
not.
Watch out for the well-being and welfare of its citizens. They're on their own.
It is not
the function of government to watch out for
show
the well-being
me the
of the United States.
Oh, by the way, I've got you.
I'm not sure what amendment it was that created the IRS. Was it the 18th?
16th
Amendment.
Hang on, you asked me.
Yeah, there's the answer. Whatever amendment created the IRS gave them the power to do whatever the heck they want with
your
money.
Well, an amendment that provided for the taxation of income.
Oh, well, there you go.
Let's see. Yeah.
And then it's
16.
Okay. So
Congress
the 16th
has
amendment.
The power to lay and collect taxes on income.
So where do they get the power to do that? It's called the 16th Amendment. You just read it. Okay.
Yeah,
there you
have it. That has nothing to do with health care.
Sure it does.
No, it has nothing.
If the government decides they want to spend the money they've taken from you on health care, they can do it. If they want to spend it on a war that we don't need, they can do it.
I'm sorry, you just are wrong.
And if I'm going to spend $500 billion of my tax dollars, I'd rather see it go to American health care than rebuilding the Iraqi economy.
I think that Iraq ought to pay for Iraq's economy.
I do too.
They ought to pay for
$90 billion right now.
And if I remember,
it was the GOP, Donald Rumsfeld, Dick Cheney, and George Bush that told us it was a cakewalk and it was going to pay for itself in oil revenues. We're actually going to make money on this war, is what they were telling us. Same thing as we're now bailing out the banks. We might actually make money on this in a pig's eye. We're not. You know, the thing is, James, we're not bailing out that $100,000 mortgage. We're bailing out the $10 million derivative behind it. It's all funny money. It's all blue sky and fluff. And we're bailing out these guys that came up with these products. And they're all lobbyists. Most of them run McCain's campaign. So when you tell me McCain's for change, certainly he is. He wants more deregulation.
Yeah,
he doesn't think we've been screwed badly enough.
Greg, I'm sorry, but you're just out to lunch on some stuff.
Well, me and 77% of the U.S. public.
Yeah, well,
thank you.
Let's remind you, you can always count on Paul's support if you're going to rob Peter to pay Paul. Paul's always going to be for that. And all the people that Barack has riding in the wagon and the Democrat Party's got permanently in the wagon, they're going to vote Democrat. I know that. I don't doubt it a minute, because they want more handouts, more freebies, more free health care. They want more giveaways.
No, we want less of what George Bush and the Republicans have been doing for the last 28 years.
Created the best economy in modern history, and you don't like it.
I'm not sure what economy you're talking about. You sound like John McCain when you say the fundamentals are sound. They're not, James.
For
not
2 years, since Nancy
our
Pelosi,
insurance industries,
since Nancy
banks,
Pelosi,
are these parts of a foundation of our economy?
All of those are connected to the Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and the housing scandal, all of which were at the feet of the Democrats.
I know.
It's those black people that
took out loans that are all to blame. I know that.
Many of them were not qualified and shouldn't have had a loan.
Right, and the banks didn't vet them. Hello.
Jamie Gorelick and Janet Reno told them to make loans, and that was under Bill Clinton.
Was there an incentive for the banks? No, there wasn't. They had no exposure to the loans when they failed.
Because they could sell it to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. But who forced them to make loans? Have you read about Henry Cisneros lately?
Nobody forces anyone to make a loan.
What's Jamie Gorelick and the Justice Department and Janet Reno, Attorney General, and Bill Clinton, the President, and then the HUD Secretary, Henry Cisneros? You've not read what all they did.
I'm aware of what's going on at HUD. And I'm aware of Henry Cisneros, and I think he's a corrupt individual.
He was a sharp guy.
I think he's a corrupt individual.
Went down the wrong pathway. A sharp, right guy. Went down the wrong pathway.
Kind of like Ted Stevens.
Kind of like Stevens.
And I would like to commend both John McCain and Sarah Palin for asking Ted Stevens
to
step down.
He should.
But he's not going to.
Well, he must be a Democrat then.
Of course not. He's a Republican who thinks he has a right to that office.
Well, Republicans usually resign. It's Democrats that typically don't.
Well, I think he will resign now since the head of his party has told him to take a hike.
I think he should.
And every Republican that stood up for his resignation, I commend you.
I think he should.
I commend you because he should take a hike.
You're good. We got to go. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. We've got a few minutes left in the program today. We're having a big time. Greg Forrest and I visiting about the election and some of the issues of the deal. Before we get back to Greg and talk, we're going to visit a little about some voter fraud. I need to remind you about Ken Stoppel Ford Lincoln Mercury, the 2008 closeout final week. Now, it's October Truck Month. Listen to this special. I mentioned it earlier. This is absolutely phenomenal. A 2008 Ford F-150 Super Crew. Now, that's that big, pretty four-door. Beautiful truck. Gets 19 miles per gallon on the highway. Power windows, power locks, air conditioning. Folks, this vehicle, manufactured suggested retail price, $27,820. And it's on sale right now for $16,995. Folks, if you were toying with getting a truck, you probably ought to be looking right now.
You sure that's not a misprint?
I mean, folks, I'm serious.
That's a great price.
If you're going to look, you'd need to be right now. They've got an 08 Ford Ranger regular cab. Now, folks, that's the smaller pickup, okay? The 08 Ranger regular cab. Now, it's automatic and it's air conditioned. Folks, it's suggested price of $17,800. And he just reduced the price to $11,998. That is Terry Massey moving out in October truck month, Ford F-150 Super Crew and Ford Ranger regular cab. Tremendous price. Now, if you need a rather simple, kind of plain, brand new truck, Ford F-150 regular cab with manual transmission, listen to this, $10,995. This is happening at Ken Stopel Ford Lincoln Mercury, 400 Sydney Baker South. Now, by the way, you're invited. Come see me Friday morning from 9 to 11 at Ken Stopel Ford. You can have a cup of coffee and a donut. I'm going to give you a party favor. You can get to participate if you'd like. That's this Friday, the 31st. Now, I was told by Terry Massey they will not be wearing Halloween costumes. You know, I just wanted to set the record straight. He assured me they would not be wearing Halloween costumes. Darn, I was kind of looking forward to that. I wanted to see who was going to be Dracula. All right, let's talk voter fraud. What do you do with daily news reports? I mean daily, about Acorn and fraudulent registration just all over the country, and in particular, the four or five states that are the battleground states. That doesn't sound like fairness and honesty and integrity to me. It sounds like trying to steal the vote.
I guess one of the ways I feel about that is, first you need to discern the difference between voter registration fraud and voter fraud. Voter registration fraud is an attempt, I guess, to register voters that are not eligible. A voting fraud, on the other hand, is a felony. In fact, they're both felonies. But that's when someone actually casts a vote that they're not eligible to do. And I would like to ask you, James, in the last, well, since 2000, how many people have been convicted in a federal court of voter fraud?
Well, I have no idea.
One person.
Year was it?
I don't even know. I think it was 2006.
Do you happen to remember what state?
No, I don't. But one person got, and it was a Republican.
What did they do?
I'm not sure.
Do you remember?
I'm not really sure because, you know, so many things are legal, like caging votes and stuff like that. But let's go to Acorn a second since you brought that up. Now, a number of, I guess what you would call ineligible voter registrations have occurred.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, my first question to you, James, is who brought these to light? Who actually finds these bad registrations?
Probably county clerks and various people at the courthouses where the stuff ends up processing through.
Wrong. You want to try again, James?
Probably the news media as they uncovered it.
Okay. Well, I'll go ahead and give you three swings at bat. Strike two.
Because, of course, the
People at Acorn that pull these votes in actually vet each and every one of them, and they pull aside the votes that look like they may be the Mickey Mouse, you know, the Ronald Reagan, the people that are registering like that. Those are all culled by Acorn and brought to the attention of the Attorney General's office in each state. So, essentially, the voter registration fraud that's basically a non-issue has been brought to light by Acorn. So please tell me if I'm wrong on that, but I do believe the policy is on Acorn that they vet every single vote. The ones that are iffy get put in another column. And when they turn them into the state attorney general, they say, we've got these 1,500 over here we don't think are valid. You might want to take a look at that. And that's how Acorn delivers votes to the secretaries of state of each state. So this whole Acorn thing, it's a total misnomer. They hate it because Acorn's gone out and registered millions of new voters that are going to lean Democratic. That's why they hate it. The voter fraud's going to be at the voting booth when we punch in about, I don't know, I'm thinking maybe 370 electoral votes for Barack Obama.
It could be huge.
Okay, so tell me where this acorn, who actually found these voter registration? Let's go back to that.
Little bit of it was what you just said. The bulk of it, though, is fraudulent and on purpose and intentional. We have article after article in the Wall Street Journal. We have article after article in Washington Times. And that show clearly, like the one I had one yesterday where they had 1,800 acorn registrants in the state and six of them were valid.
Okay, so let's put it this way. What I'm saying is, you're saying that Acorn is not vetting the registrations that they're pulling in.
Some of them.
Well, I mean,
some of them.
Of those 1,800, you say were invalid, all but six. I wonder how many of those Acorn vetted. I bet every single one of them was proven to be invalid by Acorn, James.
Yeah, okay.
Hello?
I'm not buying the Democrat Party talking point that Acorn is this magnanimous and wonderful.
I'm not saying they're magnanimous.
No,
I'm just saying, look at the way.
They're a bunch of crooks. They're thugs.
Oh, a bunch of
thugs. They're a bunch of thugs because this has gone on for year after year.
Go ahead and call them Muslims while you're at it.
Now, wait a minute.
They're Muslims,
thugs
too.
In suits.
Let's do commies.
Thugs in suits because they are fraudulently registering people like the one guy that registered 70 times.
Gay Muslim terrorist.
70 times. And you know what the lady said when they had him on the TV and then they asked her for a comment? She said, why, there's been no voter fraud because nobody's voted yet.
Well, and also all I got to say is there's been one conviction in the last 8 years for voter fraud. So it's not an issue, James. It's something y'all
want. Oh, it is an issue.
Oh,
it is
an issue for losers.
It's a big issue.
It is a big issue for losers.
It's an issue when intentionally the Democrats don't want voter IDs like, say, a picture or proof of citizenship.
Well, you see, this is a right-wing thing that I'm totally against. I think we need a national ID card.
Well, I do think we ought to be able to prove who we say are to vote.
I agree with that.
At least say that.
I agree with that.
I don't know about the national ID card. I'm kind of for it in one way, and I'm kind of against it in another. That one puzzles me. No, I mean,
just every other country in the world, does it. It's pretty, and it'd be a pretty easy way to keep track of things like
that.
But
I would like to have.
There'd be no voter fraud if there was a national ID card.
I don't know.
But the far right's against it, and so is the far left. I guess I'm a moderate, doesn't think it's such a bad thing.
The Democrats will still figure out how to vote dead people and pets and illegal aliens, because they did that in Washington when the Gregoire lady, the governor, won by 133 votes. They did figure out that's what happened, because dead people had voted, pets, illegal aliens, and convicted felons, and she only won by 133 votes, but the Secretary of State had already validated.
Well, I bet she's went out on her acceptance speech. I imagine she thanks every corpse and pet for their vote.
Now, good insight, folks. I like it. I got to remember that line.
But, James, essentially what's coming up Tuesday is a resounding defeat for y'all's ideology and your policies.
No.
It isn't
that capitalism didn't work.
It's that the right-wing government
is a failure, and there's the problem.
No, GOP running the government is a failure.
Government's a failure. and free enterprise is not.
And so, you wonder why a government's a mess when people, like James, think it's a total failure. We need to get rid of government. The GOP doesn't govern. They hate government.
We need to get rid of a lot of it.
They can't govern. They hate it. Milton Friedman, we're going to reduce it to the size that we can drown it in a bathtub. Well, you've done it. All the money's gone.
Hey, folks, we've had fun. This is News and Views. We've been visiting with Greg Forrest. We've had a good time, talked through a bunch of issues. And, folks, you need to vote. Now we're out of time. Got to go.
Absolutely.
Thanks.
Thank you, James.